Hi, I'm Esther.
And I'm Sean.
I write about AI news here at Tech Target in Massachusetts.
And I edit Esther's stories.
We're here to talk with tech experts about everything AI and ChatGPT.
Don't forget Google Gemini.
Whether it's who's ahead in the generative AI race, the metaverse, digital twins, or even the latest in autonomous vehicles, we've got it covered. Right, Sean?
Yep, we've got it covered.
Hello, everyone. We are back again with another Targeting AI episode. Today, we are discussing music. On April 2nd, over 200 musicians, including Jon Bon Jovi, Nicki Minaj, Billie Eilish, the Jonas Brothers, signed an open letter that was put out by Artists' Rights Alliance. The letter asks AI developers, organizations, to stop the predatory use of AI to steal professional artists' voices and likenesses. To discuss the letter, which uses pretty strong language, we are speaking to Jen Anderson Miller, the CEO and co-founder of AudioSecond, a music licensing company that helps emerging artists and composers for placement in places like Netflix, HBO, ABC, and others. Jen also hosts the AudioSecond podcast, which covers AI in music and the role of AI in the life of a recording artist. Thank you for joining us on today's podcast, Jen.
Thank you for having me.
So before we actually jump into the letter itself, can you just tell us a little bit about AudioSecond and how you became connected to all these artists and your growth and what you've been doing the last couple of years and how you kind of ran up against AI? Or was AI always a part of your company?
Getting started, basically, I was working in the action and extreme sports industries. And this was over a decade ago, and it was very difficult to clear music. I loved music, and so a few people from the snowboard industry had asked me to help them clear music for videos, for athlete videos. What I discovered very quickly is that it was incredibly complex, full of legalese. The process was nearly impossible. And there was just no easy way to get rights to use music. And we were trying to do this online. And at this point, you know, YouTube was really in its infancy. This was actually back in like 2009. And so, you know, independent creators, freelancers, it was pretty much just something that you really couldn't do, like use music and video. That prompted myself and my co-founder to go and sign independent artists who controlled all of their rights to agreements, and then we would effectively take music that we had signed onto these agreements to the people that I was working with in action and extreme sports. So that's how we got our start. And then from there, we started talking to a few investors about, you know, what this would look like if we did something like this online and streamline copyrights to where other freelancers and people creating, you know, user-generated content could go and legally license their music. And that was really the birth of AudioSecond. As far as the use of AI, in 2019, I started speaking with the founders of what's AIMS, AIMS Technology or AIMS API, and they do a similarity search. That was their first AI technology that they launched. They've since launched a number of others and have really become an industry standard. So in 2020, we launched a partnership with them where we use their AI to make search much easier. And so that was the first use of AI in AudioSecond's tech stack, and that was 2020. During that period, nothing was really surfacing about generative AI. It was really the use of traditional AI. And last year was the first time generative came on my radar in terms of potential risk and reward.
So before then, have you always like been interested in AI technology, or were you like looking? I know you mentioned, I forgot the name of the company that you just mentioned, apologies, but were you there always an interest in AI or how AI could fit in music for you?
It wasn't so much of a conscientious decision until we started using AIMS. And even then, I don't think I thought of it as this massive monumental event. I think it was more, we've heard AI thrown around for years and years. And at my house, we use smart devices and, you know, we use Alexa and, you know, optimize communications in our household and things like that. But it was always just in the background, I would say. So it wasn't something that I was conscientiously chasing or even trying to build into what we were doing until AIMS. And then, like I said, that's really when it came on my radar in terms of how impactful it could be to make something really tedious, like finding music, unlike images where you can just scroll and look at, you know, hundreds, if not thousands in a minute. With music, you have to click and listen to every single song in order to find. And so that was a huge pain point that we were trying to address. And again, it wasn't so much that I was chasing AI, but it solved a big problem for us.
Before I ask my actual question, I just want to insert a parenthetical question. So to get the music for this podcast, I used the Creative Commons, one of those, and it took me, you know, hours of searching and listening to clips, and I finally found one, and we credit it on Podbean. I mean, you can find, you know, freely available clips now, even now, but it's still a tedious process. I don't know how many, should everybody use AudioSocket to find their clips, or do you specialize in the indie music sector? Yeah. Which is, I love too, by the way. I'm an indie music fan. So that's my first question. But my actual question is, Gen AI has taken over, seems like it's in every industry, right? And so, but before Gen AI, were you using old predictive AI to help people find songs? Or?
The first question is, should everybody use AudioSocket? And yes, of course, everybody should use AudioSocket. We've definitely carved out a niche in the indie music space. So if you're looking for Beyonce, you're not going to find Beyonce on AudioSocket. We don't represent famous musicians, primarily because the rights are tied up across multiple rights holders. It's not easy to clear. So the whole idea with AudioSocket was we were working with independent musicians who owned all of their rights so that we could, in fact, pre-clear it, make it simple. Now, as far as the generative versus traditional AI, yeah, searching was all just done with traditional AI. It wasn't generative. There's no new output. It's just analyzing the data in order to give the best possible song selection. And so that could be like, for example, now you can use text prompts. So, you know, I'm sitting at a bar, you know, in a tropical resort. I want music that, you know, fits this mood. And AI will do a very good job finding you a song for that mood. Or you can say, I want, you know, a rock track that sounds like something I would hear off of the Breaking Bad soundtrack. And it'll, again, you know, kind of use its inputs to help you find the best track. So it's really effective, but it is still on the traditional side and not generative.
Nice. So now let's touch to the meat of the matter, which is the open letter. I found the letter interesting because of a lot of the language that was used was super strong. The letter claims that AI can be a threat to musician livelihoods and calls the current use an assault on human creativity. Is AI technology in the state that it is currently being used an assault on creativity, would you say? I mean, you are in the creative space. And also the letter seems to purport that the AI creators are the ones that are the reason for this assault. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Looking back historically, music and technology go hand in hand. I mean, really, the proliferation of music has basically come about because of technology. So I think often innovators are always just looking for cool ways to enhance something. I don't think that, you know, generative AI music creators set out with the intention of assaulting human creativity. I mean, I give people the benefit of the doubt, and I tend to think that we're sort of behind this veil of ignorance until we've invented something. And then it's sort of like, well, what was the intention anyway? So I look at it more opportunistically. I think where the letter, what it's addressing is, I think it's widely understood that a lot of these training models have trained on copyrighted material without the permission of the rights holders. And that's what's being addressed by this letter. In fact, beginning of the letter, it specifically says, don't get us wrong, we believe that power of what's going to happen in, you know, in creative industries due to generative AI is, you know, transformative and exciting. However, obviously rights holders need to be at the table. And so I think of it as like, you don't want anything to be done to you. You want to do it as a party to it. So, I mean, I know this is way off using another industry entirely, but if you think about new pharmaceutical treatments, people want to give permission to be tested on. Like if their bodies are going to be sort of, you know, something that's going to be tested upon, they want to give permission that they're willing to be a party to that. Well, artists are the same. They want to be willing parties to whatever is being done, especially with music. Like with a painting, it's a physical good that you can sell, and there's a transaction that happens there. With music, there is no physical good, and it can be very difficult to protect that work. So when directly asked, in fact, during the Senate trials where Sam Altman was being questioned, the senator from Tennessee, I believe it was, Marsha Blackburn, didn't even ask the question. She said, "I prompted a Garth Brooks track and I got an iterative Garth Brooks track. You're using copyrighted material to train." And there was no rebuttal. And likewise, when the CTO of OpenAI was questioned about where the source material came from, specifically, it was the Wall Street Journal columnist that said, "Did you use videos from YouTube, from Facebook, for example?" And the answer was, "I'm not so sure about that, but if it's publicly available, maybe." And so I think all of those things kind of bring up the question of permission, attribution, and the ability to be party to how money is made by using those works.
Yeah, I was going to follow and say, is it really about permission, right? Because just because you give me permission to use my stuff, is that really what it's about? Or is it about compensation?
It's both. Again, I don't think anybody wants to have something done to them. They want to be party to what is happening. And if you're party to it, it means that if you're giving permission, you're giving permission under a certain term. You've decided, here's how I'm going to make money. You know, with Creative Commons, Sean, you brought that up. Those authors have said, I give my permission for use in these different ways. And here's the requirement when you use it. And in your case, it sounds like the requirement was attribution. But as long as people are party to the terms, I think it's both. I think they go hand in hand. I don't think you give permission without being a party to the terms of use.
What's so hard about a licensing model like streaming? I mean, I don't get why we just don't move in that direction. I mean, now, I mean, it's pretty clear that that would solve a lot of these issues. I mean, I'm sure there's some expenses involved that the Gen AI vendors don't want to take on. But so that's one thing I wanted to think about. But what would you say, though, about the other side? There's so many artists who want to use technology and Gen AI, and you know, Drake put a request out of people to make music from his music. They're like throwing it out there. Hip hop artists have always sampled other artists. We had Napster. We have the absolute flourishing of electronic dance music, techno, electronica, where people are using snippets of everything. Okay, so how's that different than LLMs, you know, taking snippets? Because I don't see anybody accusing the large language models of, you know, taking whole songs and playing them. More like using parts of them. So I think that's what these big tech vendors are going to argue when this comes to litigation. There are some artists who see a lot of potential in tech and they're not on the letter. So how do you square those two things? Like music, like you said, has always used technology, and now even more so. Esther wrote the other day that the Lin drum machine in the 90s, right? Everybody thought drummers were going to be thrown out of business, and a couple weren't. But you know, regular music has flourished just as electronic music has. So how do you square all these issues?
Okay, so the first question was about licensing models. And I think anything dealing with music, licensing is complex. Again, multiple parties, often conflicting views on what needs to happen there. And so I think the licensing models will be complex. And that's probably what's preventing something right now is I think there are, to the point of, you know, the second question, there's a lot of conflicting views about where artists, you know, want to fall on that spectrum of permission or restricting. Licensing models are possible. Like AudioSocket, you know, we have done traditional AI licensing. We've participated in traditional AI licensing models, not in generative. But yeah, licensing models are definitely, I think, how it's going to get done ultimately. It will take time if you're talking about famous music or mainstream music. Then as it relates to some artists saying, use my music, Grimes is another example. I think a lot of artists see the power to proliferate through the use of generative AI and empowering their fans. And I always go back to my own kids who are Gen A, and they're very hands-on. Like, they want to engage with material. They're not just passive participants anymore. I mean, think about TikTok and memes and everything that's happening. People want to be party to it. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of really cool generative AI models coming out where there's tremendous opportunities for artists to proliferate by making their music available in this way. And I've already been presented with models where the attribution and the compensation are part of that. I think about, because it's such a simple model, I always refer back to the cover song. The idea of somebody covering a song, you can't get permission every time you want to, you know, at a bar, sing a cover song. It's just not feasible. But they came up with a really great model for people to cover songs without asking permission. It has attribution and it has monetization. When we can find these models that can both attribute as well as compensate, there would be success. And there are those models being presented today. I can't speak because of NDAs directly to what's been kind of surfacing for us. But, you know, the way we're handling it is speaking with the artists about whether they see it as competitive or whether they see it as complementary. And then we do have a permission model set up. And so that's how we're approaching it. And I do think a lot of artists are excited about the ability to get their music out there in a much greater way by using user-generated content and just their fans to do it.
Leading to, I guess, what we talked a little bit about and what you started to talk about, which is the idea of the livelihood of artists being threatened, right? Can you speak a little bit about in what ways the livelihood of artists have been threatened by the AI technology already? Is the problem that the technology is used as data in training the language models or voice engines, or what exactly is the problem?
So I think today, the kind of the threat to livelihood amongst, you know, the artists that I've interviewed, I think that people feel like right now it more falls into the realm of background music. Already there's, you know, stock library models, and I think stock libraries, production music feels like it's a threat because the output, the generative AI output is actually gotten, it's gotten good fast. And so if the song is not the feature, if the song is what carries the story forward by just sort of some undertones, some, you know, cues underneath, that music already is being replaced. And so there are artists that whose careers have been built on creating music for stock libraries, and that is being disrupted already right now today, as well as with user-generated content where, you know, there's, I mean, I don't know what the latest stat is. Last I looked, it was something like 700 hours of video uploaded to YouTube every single minute. So that's a absolutely insane amount of content. And if it's using real music, then artists are being paid. But if it's using generative AI music at scale, which there are models out there right now where you can go and it says you can use this commercially, you can use it, you know, to promote your podcast or your vlog on YouTube or your YouTube videos or your product, that does compete with what is the historical model of human created content. And for the most part, there's another stat that it's something like 87% of videos online have music behind them. So that's where I think artists feel like their livelihood is threatened, is where the music that they would have supplied previously has been replaced by generative AI. I am finding, though, in interviewing artists, if the intention was creating music for fans, I think they feel a little less threatened and maybe like there will be a resurgence of interest in human-made music. When the floodgates open and there's good generative AI music, what is there to connect to? And now there's just all this music. Who are the people behind the music? And if there's no one behind the music, it's a lot less interesting. I mean, we've seen this massive resurgence in live music, people going out to shows. That doesn't exist when it's generative AI. Who's standing on the stage? How are people connecting, you know, to something that just really doesn't exist?
You know, when I think about YouTube, right? And when YouTube began, you know, a lot of people uploaded stuff onto YouTube before YouTube started really cracking down on it. Is there a difference between that and this?
The biggest difference is that one is creating new output unassigned, let's call it, for right now, because you can't create an entirely new song using generative AI and copyright it at this time. I see one is not licensing. And so with YouTube, They needed to put licenses in place. There were lawsuits, there were settlements, but it was still known who the artist was and who needed to be compensated. With generative AI, you know, without the whole track like attribution model and compensation defined in advance, then that music can go on and on and on and on to effectively be leveraged for new output where the original artist is never being paid. So I do see that as being the biggest difference. One of them, there was clear attribution and we knew who to pay. The other one, generative AI, if there's not attribution happening right out the gate, then that gets lost and that original author is never going to get paid.
I'm going to slip in another quick little question before the other question. First of all, do you're in largely independent artists, is their work being, you know, used to train the models? And do you have any evidence of that? And what evidence do these bigger artists have that their music has been infringed on?
For our artists, like I said, I mean, unless they're doing things on their own, we've only engaged in traditional AI training models. So, you know, training again for things like stemming, similarity search, mastering, things like that, but not for generative AI. So I can only speak to what we've participated in. As far as why would major artists say that their rights have been infringed upon, I think the open letter addresses this directly. No one has come out to say they didn't. Again, I mean, you know, Marsha Blackburn in the Senate hearing just said, you have used Garth Brooks to train. That is copywritten material. And there was no disclaimer made after the fact. Anytime this has been directly asked, people either avoid the question altogether or they don't give an affirmative or a negative. So I think that it's understood, like at least in all the conversations I have, it's been understood that copywritten material has in fact been used. Nobody's going to admit that. That would be opening up a can of worms that nobody's prepared to do. So I guess it would be the lack of evidence that it hasn't been used as opposed to direct evidence that it has been used. And, you know, to the point of the Senate hearing, the song sounded just like Garth Brooks. If he wasn't used in the training material, how do you get something that effectively sounds like an iterative work?
I have a question that steps a little bit away from, I guess, my next question, but it is a question I asked a lot of the people I spoke for this, and which is, okay, so if we look at the open letters that has been written in the past, and we look at the open letters or we have lawsuits against AI creators. Other than stating our rights as music is being infringed upon, we're calling upon them to like stop. What is the next step, I guess? And what is the point, right? Because there's a lot of open letters, but how would this accomplish what the artist wants to be accomplished?
I think it's making it known that, you know, what their views are and that this is a problem. So I guess creating awareness would be my assumption. The open letters and their effectiveness is sort of what you asked as well. And to be honest, I don't know how effective those open letters are. I've seen a number of them myself. I can't say that they directly lead to action. I do think action is really important. And that is what we are doing at AudioSocket is taking action. We're looking for how is it that we are part of the narrative? How do we set the terms of use? That's why we've taken steps to basically put an AI clause into our contracts.
We're glad you mentioned the clause, because how does that clause work? I mean, can you tell us about it and how did it come about? And are other companies doing the same thing, other music licensing companies, and should they?
Again, I guess to what I was saying about being part of the conversation and setting up our own terms, we did this for two very big reasons. One, we feel like artists have the right to know how the company that's representing their music is engaging in AI and with AI. So we basically, you know, called kind of an artist town hall, we have over 3,000 artists that we represent. We invited everybody to this call. And it was really sort of an ask me anything kind of a call. I first discussed why we were doing this, and then I just left it open to the artists. I believe we've only lost two artists since changing up the contract, which I would say is a success given we have over 3,000. What we did in our clause is we basically said, listen, we think it's really important you know what to expect from AudioSocket. So we defined traditional and generative AI in the clause. And then we basically said with traditional AI, we will be supporting sort of the ecosystem of traditional AI. And we see that as being tools that are helping to elevate and optimize the creative industries. So again, stemming, mastering, similarity searching, playlisting, these things that take a lot of time that have already helped us win more business, and they're not creating new output from these works. So that is compulsory in our agreement. And I think it addresses what, for example, Andreessen Horowitz, they submitted to the Department of Justice Copyright Office open call for letters on AI. And what they said was, we believe it's fair use, and kind of laid out their rationale for that. So I think they had really great points that really resonated with me specifically, but I don't think it's fair use. I don't think we hit the marks of the fair use test. You know, to their point, we do need to limit only large tech companies having access to data sets to train. I think it's important that startups and, you know, small innovators can access data sets. So that's one of the reasons that we said we're going to have compulsory and affordable AI training models to help innovators and people in the space get where they need to go, and not limit that to the people that can afford to license at very high costs. But again, we don't see this as directly threatening our artists. If anything, it's helping our artists. It's helping us to sync more media. It's with STEMs. It's helping us open up this media to more opportunities. Now, generative AI, we basically see as generating new output. And that is something that we will only do as a collective licensing model with an opt-in. So artists can basically say, we are interested in this specific opportunity or we are not, and we're doing it on a case-by-case basis. So if artists don't want to opt in to one opportunity, but they want to opt in to another, they can make that decision on a case-by-case basis. And we feel like that's the most fair, the most transparent, and ultimately we'll have the best outcome, because to your point earlier about some artists are making their music available and others are not, this gives them the opportunity. If they want to make their music available to anything and everything they can, if they only want it to be used in specific ways, then they can do that. I also made it known that, you know, we are not looking to replace our own business. So we're not engaging in something that doesn't have the direct attribution compensation. And for us, we're not looking to be replaced. I mean, to kind of say, yes, go train on this material once, pay us one time, and then be done with us, that makes no sense. So I think it's just sort of business people being smart about how they wish to engage. And then, like I said, making sure that the artists are part of it where their output is potentially at risk.
Very interesting. I see the way that you guys are doing it as a business. And I know that you're very well versed with like music licensing, right? And so is music licensing the solution to this problem? If yes, how? And then what laws or IP rights are in place to help protect musicians and artists already? And if not, what is the solution? Is it that ultimately we have to wait for like the court to decide how all this will play out? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, again, I mean, with the clause that we've put into our agreements, we're sort of establishing our own law in the interim. We're saying, here's the terms of use. Like, we've made it publicly known that we're engaging in AI in these ways. So the artists know, but also users know. With lack of established law right now, we are saying this is how we will engage. And by making that publicly known, that becomes, I think, de facto law. It's sort of working law until those things are established. As far as is licensing the way, so copyright is, you had asked, how is an artist's intellectual property protected? And that would be via copyright. As far as licensing models, again, those are going to be complex where you're talking about multiple rights holders. But with companies like AudioSocket that operate in this, you know, we can speak holistically, then those can get done much quicker. Now, again, back to how we're approaching it, we do have a permission-based model for generative, and then we have a compulsory model for traditional AI. But if somebody calls me up, we can come to an answer pretty quickly. We're in the midst of this right now with a generative AI music company. They presented their opportunity. They demonstrated how the technology tracks the source material and how it compensates the artists that were part of the source material. So, you know, when they check the boxes, that's when I go to my artist advisors and I say, is this interesting to you? Where you see attribution and compensation and sort of that proliferation that I referred to earlier, are you interested? And right now, the artist advisors are interested. So now we'll take it out to our members and see which members wish to participate. And if we get enough adoption, which with this specific example, I know I'm being vague about the example, but again, I'm not really at liberty to speak specifically, but it is something that I see as a way for these artists to make more money and to have their works proliferated where somebody knows who the artist was of the source material. And so I think we'll get a lot of adoption there. And I think it will, to the point of like, you know, my kids and kind of the Gen A, it'll make that material more exciting to engage with because they can go and create new works.
Okay, I have another question about licensing. So the, you know, Apple Music, Spotify, you have, you know, licensing rights, but a lot of artists complain, and perhaps justifiably so, that the amount they're getting is minuscule, which is forcing artists to tour to make any real money, right? As opposed to the old model of CDs and albums and yes, there's some vinyl now, but it's a small part of the market. How can you be sure that you don't set up this new licensing model and the artist still gets screwed?
Yeah, I mean, I think until you've done something, it's hard to know exactly what the outcome is going to be. So I think you put as many terms as you can think about into the bucket, so to speak. Like you frame it out in a way that you think is going to ensure fair compensation. We don't know what we don't know, and that's the biggest risk. Time will tell us that obviously you can't have foresight for something that you're not yet aware of. There are models we don't yet know will exist. That's always going to be the risk factor. But I do think today we have the information to make good decisions about how artists should get compensated. Part of that is being realistic as well. I think one of the issues with streaming is, you know, what is that rate? How much does the model actually generate and who's actually earning those revenues? I'd like to see, personally, at AudioSocket, we are working on a more equitable, transparent model holistically, but it looks really different than what the music ecosystem looks like today. So whether or not that's going to be a model that becomes highly adopted, I don't know yet. But if it is, it is something where we're really trying to look at all those different variables and write what we see as having been sort of the inequalities of the past.
So AudioSocket, are you planning on creating your own LLM? And then from what you've seen in the market, right, how many, do you see many Gen AI music companies popping up now with the use of Gen AI?
I'm approached almost weekly with new models. Again, what I'm after, like kind of in the very first email or conversation, the first thing I want to know is, how are you ensuring attribution? And what is compensation in an ongoing capacity? Those two boxes have to be checked before I would engage further in a conversation. So, you know, back to Sean's question a minute ago, that's how I'm beginning my conversations. Do we check these boxes, attribution, compensation? In terms of like what we're seeing, it really runs the gauntlet. I mean, there's things, again, that I've not really thought about before. And then there's things that already exist today. And we're just opening up the opportunity to make things quicker, easier, smarter with generative AI. I think we're going to see loads and loads and loads of models popping up. And so I think for companies like ours to have established frameworks for them, I think we'll be able to create a win-win solution.
I think it's really smart of you guys getting out ahead of this, you know, like not just reacting. So that's what I find interesting about your approach, you know. And you're like making proposals that advance the discussion and not just, you know, having to scramble. So that's really smart. I guess my last, you know, question is just the open-ended, like what do you see as the future of AI and music, you know? Will you have LLMs playing music in a band impersonating the LLM? On stage, or will we have a nice ecosystem like Spotify and Apple, but maybe better with more fair compensation? Are artists going to still, are live music still going to exist 100 years?
I'm on the side of, I think that human-made music is going to continue to be something that people want. I think it will become more interesting as generative AI music floods the market. I don't hear anybody ever saying, we need more music. More music is what the world needs. Like, I think we have so much music. And I think curation is where we're going to see things moving. I think more curation, higher quality content is going to be desirable because I think there's going to be a lot of meh content. I think generative AI isn't going to have the same, even if it gets really, really good, back to the point of like a live artist, it is not going to have the same appeal, I don't think. I just think that humans desire human connection, and a connection to a robot is not nearly as interesting or compelling. Like, are you going to dress up and go out to, you know, go see a robot play live? I don't know that the appeal is there. So I think that we're going to see a lot of really incredible, cool things come out of it. I do think that, you know, artists will open up the opportunity for fans to engage deeper. But I think that they all want to see that those compensation models are in place. I've not yet found sort of the hub, sort of, I know in back to the Senate hearings with Sam Altman, he said, you know, we are talking to artists and creators. We do want them to be at the table for this conversation. But I've yet to see any kind of like hub where people just know this is where we go to have those conversations. And here's the timeline to get, you know, solutions in place. And that is why, again, we did what we did, because I don't see that, you know, nobody's put a wick in it. And so we did that with what we are doing at our company by saying, here's the terms of engagement. And so somebody would be breaking the law if we've established our terms of engagement and made those terms public, and now somebody infringes. We're trying not to react. We're trying to be proactive in our approach to how our artists will be part of these models going forward.
Thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate your time for joining us, especially on such a quick turnaround. To our listeners, please check out the Audio Socket podcast. Where can they check it out, Jen?
So it's on Apple, Spotify, but YouTube is where the video podcast is. We have some incredible speakers. John Zeger, who is a co-founder and on the board of Responsible Innovation Labs. So they basically are advising AI companies like OpenAI on responsible innovation. How do we set up these guardrails in advance? It's really great work. So he's on the podcast series. Jacqueline Charlesworth, who is former Department of Justice Copyright Office attorney. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I got a number of really incredible people contributing to the series. So I would recommend YouTube. And it's just Audio Socket's channel on YouTube, and you'll find the series right there. So it's called Equitable Solutions for Artists in an AI Era.
Perfect. There you have it. So Jen speaks to interesting guests, like she just mentioned. And then for more on AI, music, all about copyright, and all the articles that I write, please check out Tech Target editorial website. Thanks again, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the Targeting AI podcast.